a inscrição das candidaturas. Estamos aguardando a mesa.
Senhor presidente.
Para esclarecer, senhor presidente, quem vota sim.
Pela ordem, tem que
esclarecer.
Vossa Excelência não pode passar
sim,
a voz do senador.
What you're listening to are Brazilian legislators fighting over selecting the Senate leader on February 1st. After more than 24 hours of session and much confusion, the lawmakers elected an ally of new president Jair Bolsonaro, making it easier for his government to introduce legislation. But having support from the presidents of both houses might not be enough. After promising voters renewal and an end to horse trading in Brasilia, Bolsonaro will still have to convince Congress, its parties, and caucuses his ideas are the best ones for the country.
What is lacking right now is a coalition in order to make it possible for the government to translate the will of the majority into policy, right?
That's Carlos Pereira, professor of political science at Fundação Getúlio Vargas in Rio de Janeiro. He spoke with my colleague Luisa Leme about the Bolsonaro government's strategies to usher through legislation in Brazil's complex multi-party Congress. Pereira wrote the book on the subject, literally. It's called Making Brazil Work, Checking the President in a Multi-Party System. Pereira, who's held posts at Stanford University and the Brookings Institution, explains why presidents always face challenges when coming to power, what Bolsonaro's approach to Congress has in common with that of Donald Trump, and how the rules of the game in Brasilia can still help Brazil grow in the future. I'm your host, Karin Zissis of ASCOA Online.
You're listening to Latin America in Focus.
Latinoamérica en Foco.
América Latina em Foco.
A podcast by America Society, Council of the Americas, on politics, economics, and culture in the region.
Carlos, thank you so much for being with Latin America in Focus today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me start out by asking you, how, once a presidential candidate gets elected, where must he or she start in order to deliver on campaign promises?
You know, in countries like Brazil, and in which the president is elected in a minority status, in order to govern, and the president has to build a post-electoral majority. And it's not an easy task. It's not like the U.S., in which the president is elected with the majority or minority, and that's it. So in a multi-party setting like Brazil, and president can invite other parties, like in parliamentary regime, to hang in his coalition in exchange for something, for a program, for a platform, for a cabinet position, and whatever. However, this task, as I mentioned earlier, is not an easy one because, and I have an evidence suggesting that the greater the coalition in terms of the number of players, so number of political parties, the greater the coalition, the more heterogeneous this coalition is. Heterogeneous, I mean, ideologically speaking. So from the left to the right and passing to the centers and disproportional coalitions. So what disproportional coalition means? So usually the president has a choice of rewarding coalitional partners based on their political weight in Congress. Let's assume that a party A would hold 20% of the seats in Congress. So if the president would like to have this party engaged in his administration, this party has to receive at least 20% of resources under the discretion of the president. Cabinet position, bureaucratic position, pork politics. So if the president decides to build a disproportional coalition, a bigger coalition and a heterogeneous coalition, the president is going to face lots of trouble of governing.
Okay.
So that's exactly the case of Bolsonaro, for instance. Bolsonaro, instead of building a majoritarian coalition, he decided to build a minority coalition. And this coalition is very heterogeneous. there is not a ideological and ground, common ground, and also it's very disproportional. And so Bolsonaro over-rewarded the Democrats, for instance, them, rather than other parties. But beyond that, there is another very interesting aspect, which is how far the coalition is from Congress. So Bolsonaro decided to build a very heterogeneous coalition, a disproportional one, and above all, a incongruent coalition. There is no match whatsoever in what the Congress wants and what the coalition wants. So Bolsonaro is facing lots of trouble at the beginning of his administration, in my view, because of his bad choices of managing the coalition. Because remember that building a majoritarian coalition is not only important to approve whatever the president wants, but to reject, to veto whatever the president doesn't want. And so what Bolsonaro is just facing right now, lots of friendly fire, you know. His son is involved in a corruption scandal, and now is his former minister that would be in charge of negotiating with Congress. So, and he, if Bolsonaro himself didn't, you know, does not pay enough attention of building and rewarding and managing this coalition well, and his life will be miserable because there is no such a thing as a straight line in politics. Everybody is tainted. So the coalition is somehow a protection against all those bad smells that may emerge when coalitional partners are not coordinated.
The Brazilian executive has always negotiated with Congress in that system then. If we have a presidential multi-party system, is Bolsonaro now, he's a newcomer, right? I don't like very much of calling him an outsider because he has been deputado in the chamber for years. So he was inside the political machine. But he's a newcomer. He is the first time that he is in power. Has that happened before in Brazil? How does that happen when power changes?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And it's, again, it's not a peculiarity of Brazil, but from presidential regimes. Even in the US, when a new elite arrives in power, a new political elite, and substitutes an old one, and there is a paradox. The paradox is the following. The new elite arrives with lots of energy, lots of political will, and engaged in doing something different. However, they usually lack expertise. They lack experience. So, and the paradox is the following. By the time goes by, and because of all those fights within the coalition members and mistakes and you know, usually the newcomers or the new and governments, they lose political capital and they gain political experience. So when they do know how to do things, they no longer are powerful.
You're talking about the end of the honeymoon?
Yeah, something like that. You know, at the beginning, Bolsonaro is full of, you know, energy. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that.
Very high approval rating. Everybody's with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, but very low level of expertise, as you describe it, and very low level of you know, experience. And it takes a while for them to get used to routines, to procedures, and they make mistake. And by the time they make mistake, they lose political capital.
Got it.
But I remember that it happened with Fernando Henrique Cardoso as well. It happened a lot with Lula. Lula's and you know, top and priority of his administration at the beginning when he was elected in 2002 and when he inaugurated his administration in 2003. So the and Fome Zero program is
Zero Hunger
program was a top priority, but was a completely misplaced program, and it failed completely. But Lula was able to adjust and substitute the Zero Hunger program for the Bolsa Família, for the and cash transfer and mechanism in order to alleviate poverty and social inequality. So, but it took about a year for the government to realize that.
So we were talking about how the Workers' Party and the PSDB, both when they were at the presidency, they had more skills. They learned the hard way, maybe, perhaps it took a year, you said, for them to learn the hard way and understand that they had to negotiate with Congress. Can you talk about how this government, Bolsonaro's government, has adopted a different strategy? Bolsonaro got elected denying all the toma lá da cá, right? Denying that he had to go into the nitty-gritty negotiations with politicians, because politicians now are seeing Brazil as dishonest people, that they are being denied by Bolsonaro's base. So what is the strategy now?
Yeah, that's a excellent question. And, you know, Bolsonaro's emerged and as someone and capable of offering law and order, right? Bear in mind that Brazil has been exposed in the last, you know, and 10 years or so to a set of and scandals, corruption scandals, and initially and very concentrated on PT, on the Works Party's members, but the scandal spread out to many traditional parties, PMDB, PTB, and MDB, PSDB. So all those parties have misbehaved. And Bolsonaro took advantage as someone who never got engaged in those kinds of corruption. His name was never cited. And to offer himself as clean, as different, and he made a mistake by associating and coalition presidentialists to corruption, as if all and you know coalition would necessarily and be a corrupt coalition. But that kind of discourse, that kind of narrative worked extremely well during the campaign, and especially among and conservative voters and his core voters, and that and they were eager for and someone capable of not being involved in all those kind of schemes. However, when he was elected, everybody thought that he would now understand that campaign is completely different than governing. But he seems to be like in campaign still, because he built his administration and not taking into account the preferences of the party leaders and relying mostly on his very effective during the electoral campaign direct connection with voters via social media and so on and so forth. There is a very nice literature in the U.S. called a going public strategy. So it's very common in the U.S. when the president does not enjoy majority in one or both houses. And when the president anticipates that Congress will veto his initiatives, the president is tempted to bypass and Congress and establish direct connection with voters in order to keep pressure on Congress for Congress to support him.
Are we talking about Donald Trump right now?
Donald Trump or even others. You know, the U.S. has many previous examples, but Donald Trump perhaps is a very good example. But this literature calls our attention by saying that this strategy is very risky because it generates success only in the short run. But in the long run, it tends to upset party leaders because if you feel ignored by the president, as soon as the president presents any kind of vulnerability, fragility, the president is very lose his bargaining power, his capacity to set the agenda, and the agenda and this capacity and switch hands, you know, part leaders and can make the president hostage of Congress very easily. So the risk that Bolsonaro is facing right now by not having a majoritarian coalition and negotiating via direct connection with voters, ignoring Congress, is that he probably will lose political capital very quickly. That's why it's key for him to send all tough legislations at the beginning of his administration, because if he succeeds, for instance, approving and the Social Security reform, he might rely on this success to keep putting pressure on Congress on other and tough legislations, you know. But it's important to keep in mind that in order to approve a constitutional reform, you need a supermajority, 3/5 of Congress, in 2 rounds in each house. In other words, he needs a majority coalition at least in 4 times, 2 times in the chamber and 2 times in the Senate. So rather than relying on a stable majoritarian coalition, he has to build in each of those roll calls, votes, a majoritarian coalition. So it's a very tough job, because you might not be with me today, but you might be with me tomorrow, but you might not be with me next to tomorrow. So I have to keep convincing you all the time. So if I had convinced you since the beginning, and if you are happy with me, and if you are pleased with the way I'm governing and the terms of our negotiations, you are with me always. And you're not, you know, and turn your back to me. You're not let me down, because if you let me down, you're gonna lose as well. But in the case of Bolsonaro's strategy of not having a stable majority, it's gonna be a much tougher job for him, you know? That's what I'm trying to say.
But he does have two good things, let's say, going for him. And one of them is Sergio Moro, right?
That's
Sergio
right.
Moro's popularity is something that helps him. There are polls that say that there is more likely to pass legislation now, such as pension reform, which is such a tough, unpopular, hard legislation to pass, now than in the Temer years, than the legislation that was proposed by Michel Temer in the previous government. Why are we being more optimistic about this new legislations passed right now if we are actually setting itself to a harder job, like you were saying?
Yeah, I think that the Temer's administration made a very good job of paving the road, right? So, and the campaign and of Temer's administration supporting the pension reform, the Social Security reform, associating and the Social Security policy as privilege, injustice, and was very effective. There is a dominant belief in Brazil right now in favor of pension reform, despite the fact that there would have lots of opposition as well. But the opposition would come by the potential losers, because a pension reform imposes concentrated costs in specific groups of the society, groups that extract those benefits. So those groups will oppose, but the majority of the society is very much in favor. So there is a dominant belief, a dominant view supporting Social Security. What is lacking right now is a coalition in order to make it possible for the government to translate the will of the majority into policy, right? In the case of Temer's administration, it did not pass, not because Temer did not have a coalition. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, Temer was, is the articulator, right? Like the professional negotiator.
That's right. And he did, he built a very nice coalition, very homogeneous, a very proportional one, a coalition that's very aligned with what Congress wanted. But the problem with them was the corruption scandal that he got engaged in. So he lost political capital very fast, and nobody would like to be associated with Temer. So Temer became toxic. But that's not the case of Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro is very popular now, and the society wants the social security reform, but he does not have majority in Congress.
At the same time, even the popular measures, even for Sergio Moro in Paulo Guedes' pension reform, we're here agreeing that like they do need to negotiate. So they might lose some of the battles that are, you know, that make them popular, right? We talked about Sergio Moro's introduction to his new anti-crime law that it's very focused on anti-corruption. That was a top concern for voters in the last years in Brazil. But then he lost the Caixa 2's portion of the law, which is, it was a law that would criminalize illicit campaign money for political campaigns. When they lose those battles, what do you think that they are setting up for it? What are the dangers here?
I think that there is a very, very nice window of opportunity to approve the pension reform. There is a very nice window of opportunity. It you know, Bolsonaro may lose it, but the conditions are there. And also with Moro's bill, there is also a very nice and window of opportunity to approve.
But do they lose political capital?
Yeah, but Sergio Moro is no longer a judge, right? So he's the justice minister, and he's a politician now. So, and he's doing what all politician does, which is to negotiate. And so it would be very tough for him to approve what he thought that could be the best for the country. But and in his position, he would like to accomplish as much as he can. You know, he has to be rational and not only idealistically. He needs to play politics. And that's exactly what he's doing. And giving up parts of the bill, and he's trying to establish compromise with legislators, with the rest of the bill, things that he believes that are more important than criminalizing Caixa 2's. You know, and perhaps, and you know, later on, and he might have political capital once again in order to put forward and, you know, this agenda.
There are other, let's say, problems that Bolsonaro administration had in the first 50 days, which were, some disagreements between their own, inside the cabinet. So you have the military, you have a group that it's sort of against multilateralism that talks about something they call cultural Marxism that has very different ideas about foreign policy. And you have Bolsonaro's family supporting that. And then you have the Paulo Guedes, the economy, let's say the more sound pension reform, things that the general public, as you said, a large support. How does that affect the government relationship with Congress on that?
And it does a lot. And the government has two very important pillars, as you mentioned earlier. And Moro on the one hand and Paulo Guedes on the other hand. I think that those two pillars are credible commitments of this administration that and the government will not behave illiberally, respecting institutions because of Moro, and also will behave in a liberal fashion, in a market-oriented way, supported by Paulo Guedes. And I think that as long as those two pillars and stay in the government, we can be somehow confident that this government will neither behave populistically, economically speaking, neither illiberally, disrespecting the rules of the game, and so on and so forth. So I'm somehow and confident that those two guys are credible commitments. Why? Because Bolsonaro cannot get rid of them. You know, the credibility of a commitment is measured by the cost that you have to face by not following that commitment. So, as you mentioned, Moro is the gold stone of this administration. So Bolsonaro cannot get rid of this gold stone because his lack of credibility would be impossible, would be unbearable to pay, you know, would be prohibitive and to pay. So that's why the same is true with Paulo Guedes, I think.
Okay. And then now we are talking about going to the new Congress. We can talk about a changing parties. You know, there are new parties in Congress. There are a lot of center right parties. And there's a big awareness from people about who is in Congress, right? And then from recent years, you start hearing some expressions in Brazil that you wouldn't hear before, like the bullet caucus, like the beef caucus, the Bible caucus. Now we even have the drug labels caucus, the people who came from pharmaceutics. So we're talking about Congress filled with parties that are non-programmatic, right? They don't have a program. They are there sort of waiting to see how they can negotiate with this government. But you also have some themes. And then you have a very conservative ideas in Congress today.
That's right. That's right. You know, there are an strong evidence in the Brazilian political science and from my own work and by others and that demonstrate that legislators do not behave according to those caucuses, according to the interests of these specific groups. Because those groups do not have control of the assets of Congress and campaign finance. So are party leaders who are in charge of appointing someone to be a president of a committee or, you know, to be the vice president of a committee to have more or less and resources for and their campaign. So if you do not vote according to your party leader indication, it's very likely that you will never and play an important role in Congress because party leaders are gonna boycott you. The leaders of those caucuses do not have this kind of mechanism. And the mechanism is party oriented.
You don't think that would be this gains of exchange would also happen in this theme realm?
No, I think that and Bolsonaro tried to do so, but he will soon realize that it's by far cheaper to develop gains from trade with parties than with those groups, because those groups and will not credibly offer support for the president on different issues, but only on the issues specifically related to that group. You see?
Okay. That's very interesting. Okay, my last question for you is about, a little bit of your work and how, you know, things dramatically changed in Brazil since 2013, right? You wrote a book in 2013 called Making Brazil Work. And from what I understand, it argues that Brazil's multi-party presidential system was working very well, was something that actually helped the country to develop, to reduce inequality, that institutions were strong, and that people were more aware on how to make government accountable.
Yes.
And then we saw that much of government policies happen based on corruption schemes. We saw the scandals such as Mensalão, and then after that, the Lava Jato operation that showed that much of what was going on was votes being bought. Are the rules of the game wrong?
Not really. That's a very, very, very good question, and thanks for that. The Brazilian legislators, and back in 1980s, and when Brazil became democratic again, and had a tough choice to write a new constitution. And the first decision was related to the electoral rules. And there were many suggestions and many proposals on the table. But legislators were really afraid of changing and decided to keep open list, proportional representation, electoral rules in which the parties do not pre-order the list, but let voters to decide who is going to go first or last. So that's what we call open list. And we allocate all those slots, proportionally speaking, based on the amount of votes that each party or coalition obtaining during the election. One of the consequences of open list proportional representation is the multi-party system. So we have more than two parties. Legislators knew that a presidential regime under multi-party system is more complicated to govern than a presidential regime with two-party system like the US. In the recent past, in the previous period of democracy from 1946 to 1964, Brazil also had multi-party presidential regime. However, during that past period, the president was fairly weak, was constitutionally weak, had no decree power, no budgetary power, no administrative powers. So the president was constitutionally weak. So what legislators learned in 1988? Well, if you'd like to preserve open list proportional representation, that is a safe bet for my survival as a legislator, I need to transfer some power for this president to be able to govern. So let's gonna delegate lots of powers for the president to differentiate himself from the previous president from 1946 to 64, in which was fairly weak. Okay, the president became strong, constitutionally strong, a powerful guy capable of setting Congress agenda, and legislators realized, oh my God, and now, who's going to control this guy? Because, you know, I will not be able to control this guy. What legislators did, legislators create a huge and very complex web of accountability institutions in Brazil. You know, Ministério Público, public prosecutors, and the judiciary, and audit courts, and also many kinds of controls and laws, and preserved a very free and independent and competitive media. And the combination of these organizations capable of checking this powerful president is working extremely well, as you describe it in your question. The Mensalão scandal, the Petrolão, the Lava Jato was exactly evidence of how democracy is working fine in Brazil, because all those conflicts have been solved under democratic fashion, according to the rules of the game, and under the umbrella of rule of law. So there is no way that the country will deviate from this path. That's why I believe that there is nothing wrong with the institutional design of the country. The problem was related of how some presidents dealt with Congress. And Lula's administration in particular, and Dilma as well, they made very bad choices. They built big coalitions, disproportional coalition, concentrated all the revenues and resources on PT hands, did not give any resources to partners, and they had to find illegal ways to reward partners in order to govern. So the corruption scandal was not a function of the multi-party presidentialism design, but was a function of the bad choice of the president to govern in a multi-party setting.
And what is your take for the future then? What do you think is going to happen? What is keeping Bolsonaro up at night?
Oh my God, he probably is taking lots of and his sleep pills because his life has been miserable lately. I hope he makes adjustments, you know. And people are smart; they learn by their mistakes. And Cardoso did, Lula also, and learned a lot by his own mistakes. And I hope that Bolsonaro learns quickly by his own mistakes, initial mistakes, and make adjustments and behave like a big man.
Thank you so much for your views, Carlos. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Karin Zissis of ASUA Online. This podcast was produced by Luis Salemi. The music in this podcast was recorded at the America Society in New York City, which has just kicked off its 2019 spring season. Go to musicoftheamericas.org to learn about upcoming concerts. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If so, help other listeners find us too by leaving us 5 stars and a review. And don't forget to subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, or Stitcher.